Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's show. I've got some wonderful guests and we are going to have a great time as this is our last show before Christmas Day. We've only got a few days to go. And I know my guests are all looking forward to Christmas because they're all smiling at me from their microphones. Hello, everybody. My name's Jill Russell and this is the Business Network Show. And this morning, I've got some brilliant guests for you. I have this lovely Sarah Ridge, who is going to co-host with me today. So welcome, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's fine. And we have Joe Thomas. How are you, Joe?
Very well, thank you.
Good, good. And we have Lee Russell.
Hey. How are you doing?
Good, good. There is a significance with both of us being a Russell, but we'll come to that in a moment. So today what we've got for you is a whole mix of business chat. We're going to be talking about each of our guests' businesses, what they do, how they got started, etc., etc. We've also got some shout outs, so please listen in. And we've also got some events coming up for you. So make sure you've got a pen and paper handy so that you can write down the next networking events that, can you believe, are going to be in January 2026. So lots to look forward to. So get your business networking off to a great start. Can I also say that if you want a shout out for any of our shows coming up, please get in touch with us. You can get in touch with me. That's Jill Russell. And you can get me on 07861 311 274. Okay, so let's start off. So Joe, welcome to the show. It's lovely to have you here. Tell me a little bit about you, Joe. Where are you based and what do you do?
So I'm based in Detlin, Kent. And I run a football coaching company while also playing semi-professional football on the side of that.
Okay, semi-professional football. So I know I shouldn't really ask this, but I think it's really important for our listeners to know. Actually, how old are you, Joe?
I'm 20.
20 years old. Okay, 20 years old. So semi-professional football and running a football academy. So tell me a little bit, if you could, about how have you had time to do all that since you left school?
So I left school, my dad runs a electrical refrigeration company, and how it got started was I was in the office being a trainee accountant.
Really?
I was so bored.
Say you look really inspired by that, Joe.
Yeah, I was so bored. So I thought I can't keep doing this because I didn't enjoy sitting in the office doing it. So at that time got picked up for Bromley, which were National League, who then got promoted to League Two. And with that, I thought I've got to set up something on the side in case, you know, nothing comes of it in a year's time.
Very sensible.
One-to-one started. And from that, off the back of that, you know, group session started with 60, 70 children. Coaches started getting employed. And now we have a coaching team worth 30 coaches and over 400 children who attend us on a weekly or fortnight basis.
Wow.
That is absolutely amazing. And yeah, I think we're all a bit wowed by that. I know when we first met, you told me a little bit, but 20. Okay. So you've obviously got a very sensible head on your shoulders. Where does this sensible head come from? Who's your inspiration?
My inspiration's always been my dad, I'll be honest. You know, he's run a company. He's now a CCO of a company called Andwis. So I've always looked up to him in the business terms, but in the sensible head probably comes from my mum, if I'm being honest.
Always the women that have the sensible head.
I think so. So yeah.
So you was trainee accountant.
Yeah.
You decided to set this up. What did you know, for young people out there, I think it's so important. Your story is inspirational. You most probably don't think it's inspirational because you're just doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
But there's other people sitting out there going, wow, okay, you had family that were entrepreneurs, which is, you know, a really good start. But what was your first steps? You had the idea. Did you do a business plan or did you just go and start?
No, so I was looking for everything. So I looked into recruitment, looked into loads of different things away from that sector. But it was actually, I was looking for one-to-ones for myself on a 3G pitch, coached by people who play football, semi-professional. There was nothing. There was literally nothing about where there was a professional, semi-professional footballer coaching you on a 3G pitch, not in some park. and has got all the insurances and things like that. So I thought, let's give it a go. Gave it a whirl, and off the back of that, yeah.
Gave it a whirl. Let's dig into that whirl, okay? So how did you actually go about it? So you found, did you go with a venue first? Did you have to get, you know, did you have to get qualified as a coach?
Yeah, I got qualified. Everyone's been super helpful, sort of pushed me in the right paths. But yeah, got a venue in Gindam, and then, you know, started with just one session a week. All of a sudden that child had a friend, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
But yeah, obviously I had to ensure welfare, child welfare insurances were all up to date and everything. And off the back of that, it grew to what it is today.
So let's just go back to, because you gave us the stats at the beginning. So you've started from nothing, which was, how old was you when you did that? Because I mean, you're only 20 now. So let's
19.
Wow.
That's pretty epic growth in a year. Wow.
So it's pretty epic growth. So you started when you're 19, you're now 20. Let's just give me the stats slowly. How many coaches, how many children, what you're doing at the moment?
Fine. So we have 30 coaches, coaches wise who are with us on a weekly basis, closer to 20. Children is up about 450 children, whether that's in schools, group sessions, one-to-ones, two-to-ones, and we've also now started a JPL team also, who compete on a Saturday in the Junior Premier League. So yeah, that's the stats. One-to-one-wise is what I take sort of pleasure in, what I love the most, because it's something, you know, football, so, I'm so ambitious about it, and sort of ensuring every child tries to get coached the right way, while ensuring everything's in place and they're safe.
Yeah.
I think you've literally ticked every box when it comes to business. So you've got a passion for something, you've identified a gap in the market, you've filled that gap, and you're doing brilliantly. It's amazing.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely mind-boggling to think what you've done and how you've done it. And obviously, you're attracting people, you know, professional, semi-professional footballers to come in and do this with you. And I know when we spoke previously, the one thing that really struck me as well, you said to me, I really like things to be run properly. You literally don't stop, do you? So you want, you know, like Sarah was just saying, that ticking, that right, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this, but you're super professional, and the care for the children is, but with both boys and girls, yeah? From what age groups?
5 to 16.
5 to 16.
But we've now sort of dappling into the social media market with big influencers as well. So we've got some sessions coming up with some big influencers where rented 11-a-side pitch and, cameramen, videographers, we're all coming down. They'll live stream it. So some really exciting things coming up, and I can't wait to sort of dabble in that market next.
I've got a feeling I'm going to see you on Dragon's Den at some point. I just think this is...
Strong chance of that. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
What's been the biggest challenge? What have you found the most difficult thing?
Biggest challenge? If I'm honest, I've not had many up to date, if I'm being completely honest. The biggest challenge for me is learning something new. It's not learning something new every day, but learning something and then trying to conquer it.
Yeah.
So for me, it's probably getting put in the right contacts and the right directions to speak to people who I need to speak to. And also pitch hire. That's the big one for me. Pitch hire, whether that's to buy a facility or to rent a facility. You know, the dream is, of course, to own our own facilities, and with 3G pitches indoors is my dream. And it's just sort of getting put in the right place where you're not getting ripped off, is the truth. I've looked into renting them, but by the time you put everything in there, then renting the facility, and you might only have the contract for 3 to 5 years.
Mm.
I don't really want to risk
it. What about the practicalities of running a business? Because I know you know, you're passionate about football. Yeah. You just want to teach the kids, like we all do with our businesses. Yeah. You know, that passion drives us. But then there's also the, you know, we've got to keep an eye on the figures and the marketing and all these different hats that we have to wear. Do you outsource stuff or do you take care of all of that yourself?
I deal with all the stuff when it comes to the figures and things like that. Social media, we have our social media lady, Daisy Alistone, who is outstanding. She's really, really good. So she'll deal with all that stuff. Figures wise, you know, I deal with a lot of it when it comes to all the other bits. We have an accountant, Joanne, who's top.
So if you can't do something yourself, folks, or it takes you a long time to do it, get somebody else.
Yeah, get someone else in.
Yeah, helps top you. Tip.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's great.
It's a massive learning curve, isn't it?
It's learning every day.
Yeah.
But that's what's fun.
Yeah.
Do you still play football yourself?
I still play, yeah. So I play
in your spare time, obviously.
Yeah. You know, we train during the week, play on a Saturday. And a lot of the, it's nice because the team who I've just joined, a lot of the kids actually watch. On social medias and things like that. So they'll come down and watch on a Saturday. So it's got that nice sort of family feel to it.
Yeah.
Which is what I want.
Which is very key because, you know, there's not many young entrepreneurs that have done anywhere near what you've done, but also that respect for the children and respect for the young people and being able to work with them. Mm. So when you're looking for coaches, and people to, you know, they might be great footballers, they might have great potential. What else do you look to them for? I mean, because they can get a coaching qualification, but it doesn't mean that they're the best fit. How do you do that? Do you interview?
Most importantly, safeguarding, ensuring, you know, child welfare is right. They've got everything, all that bit. Then them going on to personalities. I'm all about, I want the children to come in. Yes, learn football, most importantly. Yes, feel safe. But can they have that little bit of banter with the coaches? Yeah. You know, walk away with a laugh, having a laugh, learning, feeling safe. You know, what more can you want? So personalities. But then moving on to, you know, does that coach play football? Does he play some professional? Or does she play some professional? And that's also a big one for me because all our coaches are either professional footballers, semi-professional footballers, or have been professional / semi-professional. So they're now giving that sort of real life experience to our players, to our children. So yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Lee, can I bring you in here? Because let's go back to a little bit of your football journey. And
not very successful. Not as successful as yours, Joe. I don't think we won a match in 6 years we played, did we?
No, but
worst team ever.
you carried on going. You carried on going. But Joe also touched on safeguarding, and you've been involved a little bit in that in your career. So, just sort of, can I get you to introduce yourself and tell us about what you do, but also go back to that safeguarding part?
Yeah. So I'm Lee Russell. Run a company called Minimal Viable Launch, and we build AI software products for businesses who want to embark on that, either operationalizing AI inside their own business or going on an AI moonshot and potentially building an eight-figure opportunity for themselves. And I've been working in software for the last 10-plus years now, kind of fell into that. Joe, you mentioned recruitment earlier, fell into software from being a recruiter. And worked across some of the UK's largest tech companies, running a machine learning team out of Australia, the UK and the US, doing child safeguarding online. So working with authorities, secret services in the UK and the US to detect school shooting, self-harm, smuggling and gang violence, etc. So I know how important the safeguarding piece is. Community clubs, etc. play such a big role in uncovering potential abuses and harm. So I'm glad that you focus on that safeguarding side of things because it's not, you know, it is sometimes the only space that a child can basically raise a hand for help. It's not an easy thing for them to do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's, we didn't know we was going to touch on this subject, but this is what happens when you bring people in. There's things that you don't know about people or you don't expect to know about people about working in that certain space and how they do that. I mean, Sarah, if I could bring you in on this as well, because you, if you could introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm Sarah Ridge. I am the founder and CEO of the Sisterhood Networking Group. We're a networking group franchise based predominantly in Essex, because that's where I'm from. I'm from Leigh-on-Sea near Southend. But we now have 11 franchises in various locations across the UK. I'm also the host of the Sisterhood in Session podcast. So I interview inspirational women in business. There's one particular lady that featured recently. She sat opposite me currently. I am all about supporting, encouraging, helping to lift women up, inspire them, bring them together, because being in business can be tough, and having a support network around you it can be everything, I think, as a solo business owner. And the boys too. It's not just about the women. It's hard. It's really hard.
It's hard. And when we're talking about safeguarding, and you've got a networking organisation, it is that overriding looking after of business owners. And we see, unfortunately, I speak to business owners day in, day out, and there is a lot of bullying. Mm-hmm. From clients, from people that perhaps have started their entrepreneurial journey but have still got part-time work. And, you know, when we're talking about safeguarding is a huge, big issue. And obviously we've got the online space where there is people who will bully you, et cetera, et cetera. And I know, Sarah, because I've been very fortunate to be on the podcast and to start to get to know you and come to your wonderful live event in London last month, which was fantastic. And I think you've just about got over that, because that was a mega day.
It was, yeah.
But you have lots of members within your organisation who are in the field of looking after others. Mm. So how do you go about looking after your members?
I think just providing that safe space for them to come to. We have meetings running regularly in all the different locations in the different franchise areas, so you can come to as many as you want throughout the month. Sometimes that can be the only time that a solo business owner will connect with other business owners. So it's giving them that platform to be able to, you know, share the problems that they're facing, you know, ask for help if they need it. You've mentioned the online space. I think that's even more prevalent now than it is, you know, we're not hanging out so much in person anymore. Mm-hmm. So I love to be able to provide that safe space for women to offload. But putting boundaries in place as well is really important. Self-care. You boys are terrible at it. in particular, looking after yourself, you know, talking about your experiences, you know, the positives, the negatives. Being able to share.
But I think that gets hard as a business owner. I don't know if you've experienced this. The more successful you get, the bigger your problems get, the less your friends and family, unless they run businesses, understand. You know, trying to talk to your friends who have 9-to-5 jobs and saying, we're not going to make the wage bill this month and we've got 60 grand to find. They go, wow, that sounds bad. Anyway, have you seen Manchester United? Okay, guys, like it's very important to build that network of people who understand what
100%. And can I also say as well, you automatically assume when you start a business that your immediate network, your friends and family, are going to be your biggest supporters.
Yep.
Nine times out of 10, they're not.
No. And sometimes that comes from a place of fear for you. Because
yes, exactly that. I said that to someone yesterday.
Yeah, they're trying to support you, kill you with kindness. Yes. I mean, you know, I've come from an entrepreneurial family. Just saying, like, Lee is one of our sons. That's where the name come is.
You didn't mention that.
I forgot, Sarah. So we've got five children. They're all entrepreneurs. So that's good. But if you've starting out, and Joe, you mentioned that your dad was in business, so you've been brought up with that. But if you are the starting point in your family, mm-hmm. or you're the starting point in your friends group,
yep.
you're the first entrepreneur, they can be fearful for you and not understand.
Yeah.
They can be jealous of you.
I was just going to say, it's normally one of the two, yep. or both. Yeah, they're worried about how things are going to play out. They just want to keep you safe. And they also can't understand why you would want to own a business, run a business. But also there's definitely an element of jealousy there, I think.
Yeah.
And you know, you've had the confidence and the guts to go out on your own, do, you know, travel that that path that most people don't even entertain the idea of, right?
No, I think we think it's so normal to launch something, to kind of be the master of your own
destiny. When you say we, what do you mean by
like
we?
Entrepreneurs? Mm. Yeah. Like we see it as very normal and we don't see business as like risky. And if we judge the true risk of running a business, we probably wouldn't have started one. And so other people look at us kind of going, you are insane. You are, and you know, to be fair, the stats would make them right for most cases, but
yep,
that's not how an entrepreneur's mind works at all. And I think this is so important, of getting out of that bubble,
yeah,
and getting into networks with people who have been there, done that. I've had the biggest wins in my life because someone who's 5 years ahead of me have gone, oh, you can just finance it this way. Here's how you do that deal.
Yeah.
Here's a contract you can. And I'm like, how would I have ever learned that? I didn't even know to ask that question. And yeah, I've just had someone lay out the path and shorten that growth journey for me. Yeah. So it is important to get out of that little bubble you're in.
Yeah. So Joe, with you, with your peers, your friends, how have you found them do that?
Yeah, my friends have been good with it. When I started, you know, did they think it'd be probably where it is today? No. Did I? I can't say I did at this short, you know, over a year. No, my friend's been really good. As a matter of fact, we're going out for a curry tonight, you know, just to go through everything just before Christmas.
Yeah,
nice. I bet your friends think it's really cool because it's football.
No, they do think it's cool. They do think it's cool. And, that, you know, they're all doing their own things and, you know, hats off to them and wish them best luck with it.
It's really interesting because, Joe, we met at a networking event up in London at Canary Wharf. The lovely Steve Baker was launching at Pitch Golf, the Purple Cow Tribe, his networking organisation up there. And it was actually Steve. So thank you, Steve. Steve said, you must come meet Joe. He's an absolutely extraordinary young man. He did actually add 2 years to your age because he told me he was 22. Right. So we have to
How
watch him on that. and we briefly met and you told me a little bit and I was like, I need to hear more about this story because what also got me was within that particular networking organisation, there was, shall I call a certain group, seasoned business owners, seasoned networkers.
That's a really polite word. Yeah, I love it.
Oldies, yeah.
Yeah.
And there was a huge group of young entrepreneurs, of which you were one. And hearing their stories and what they were doing was so inspirational. Mm. And I can still feel it, you know. You know, that as Lee would call it, my woo-woo. It's just I can literally feel this. You know, we get, all we hear in the press is down about young
doom
people.
Doom and gloom,
Look at this.
I think your generation is so entrepreneurial compared to a lot of them before. And I think that maybe is reflected in your friend's reaction to starting a business. Like, everyone I know within your generation is like thinking of side hustles. How can I earn money online? Because, you know, you're not going to have a 50-year career anymore. Yeah. You're going to have to
and
be
entrepreneurial. No offence to the corporate gang and the 9-to-5ers, but genuinely nobody really wants to do the 9-to-5 grind anymore, do they? So I think you are paving the way, you youngsters, and it's great.
You're most probably working more than 40 hours a week.
Much more.
But when you do something you love, it doesn't feel like work.
I go on holiday and I work, you know, weekends I work, but to me it's not work.
Yeah, exactly that.
You know, I'm trying to better the company, better myself and better the opportunities for our children.
Mm. That's what I love, Joe, is you always come back to the children, and that is obviously, you know, heart and soul. And we'll come back to that in a minute because obviously we are coming up to Christmas and I know that, you know, there's lots of things that children are looking forward to, et cetera, et cetera. But when clubs stop and that normality stops, they also want to know when they're going to come back to that. So we'll come on to that a little bit later. Lee, if I can come to you, because you said that you'd started out in recruitment and so let's just go back to that. So you was in IT recruitment, but what was you find? How did you get from school to being into recruitment. And to university, and then go in there.
Yeah, well, that wasn't... Mum's bringing up some past trauma, I think, now. It wasn't necessarily an easy route from school into university, right? It was, being thrown out of school on a regular basis and not necessarily doing well academically. Somehow found my passion for learning and, driving myself forward.
Yeah.
Got into university, studied illustration, which was a terrible economic decision, but... was a really great time where I found an ability to learn complex concepts and apply creative thinking to things. I didn't know what to do after that and fell into recruitment, got a job in recruitment at one of the craziest companies. If you watch The Wolf of Wall Street, that's what it was like. We used to have parties in the office all the time. We'd finish at 12 o'clock most days for the beer to go out, which was great. And, I used to get to travel around the world to these Android developer conferences. And I was sat in Turin watching a very strange conference speech by a French designer who was talking about what if your app was a dinner party guest, would you invite that app back for a second time, or was it rude, interrupting you, selfish, needy all of the time? And I was sat there, I was thinking, I look at these apps, these developers that I employ are making, and they're rubbish. Like, I used to freely tell them that. I was like, is this a job? Can I criticize the technology? And it turned out it was, and made a plan, was offered a job up in Leeds to basically help a failing recruitment company kind of write that. I said, I'm only going to move if you let me recruit UX designers, because I knew if I built a network of user experience designers, I could use the recruitment job to speak to those leaders within that industry within Leeds every single day. And it got to a point where I'd learned enough on the evenings where I had a phone call from a potential customer who said, we would need a junior designer. I said, let me come meet you. When I met them, I said, look, give me 2 weeks. I'll take holiday, work for you for free for 2 weeks. If I'm good, you employ me. If not, I won't tell my company about this, but I'll recruit for you for free. And usually recruiting someone from an agency is pretty expensive. They snapped my hand off it. And from there, the rest is history of rapidly kind of progressing in that career, becoming a product manager and scaling products to multi-million figures in short, amounts of time.
But you went from not recruiting people and looking, was it the motivation of what they were earning and seeing what they was doing? Because you learnt your skill in the evenings, you self-taught what you do, and you've built, and we'll come on to that, what you've actually built and what you're doing now. What was your motivation there? Did you see an opportunity?
I honestly didn't even know what recruitment was. I was out with someone who'd just got a job in recruitment, and I think I was working as a gardener at the time, which I am not fit to be, because I was breaking equipment, I was chopping down phone lines, and my employer at the time was basically saying, you need to find maybe an office job, maybe you're not cut out for this. And she introduced that concept for me. I went for one interview. It was the most insane interview process I've ever been through. They made us do a Dragon's Den style interview, but okay. It was kind of like Dragon's Den and The Hunger Games combined. And we got down to the last three, and they said to me, they said to us, we're going to give you the deal. And if you get the deal, if you got the investment, you got the job. But we're going to only offer the investment to two of you.
Okay.
So now they expect us to start arguing, which I didn't want to do. So I just stepped forward and said, I'll take 100% of the deal. You only give it to me, and shook the guy's hand. And he said, right, you can leave. That's when I knew I was cut out for sales.
I love it. That's my boy. No. Okay. So moving on from there to where you are now, because you're in a very, very different place. And if you could, because you've written a wonderful best-selling book. Tell us about that. What is the journey? You've come from there to where you are now.
Yeah, so it was around COVID. I was approached by a friend of mine. They were looking for a new conference. Like, do you remember when people were doing virtual conferences? Because we couldn't go. They were like, we need this virtual conference platform. Do you know anyone who could design it? I was like, yeah, me. Mum, you've always said to me the kind of Richard Branson quote of, if you don't know how to do it, like say yes and work it out later. I didn't know how to do contracts. I didn't know how to do, didn't know, I didn't
That's
have a business.
That's literally my mantra in life.
Just get it done.
Literally.
We said yes, hired a couple of designers because I was working insane hours at that point in time. And it just spiraled out of control. We got to a point where I was earning more in the kind of 4 hours that I was working at night than I was in the, you know, 10 hours I was doing for the day job. My coach at the time, I'd invested in a pretty expensive business coach, one-to-one business coaching. He was like, quit the job. And I kept saying to him, but what if it's all luck? What if this blows up? What if I can't do, what if this has just been one big lucky streak? And he was like, Lee, it's been going on 9 months. You're doing over six figures in your first year. Quit. You're an entrepreneur.
I think you're onto a good thing here. Yeah.
He's like, what would happen if you spent 10 hours a day on this, not four? And you know, so I made the jump and we've rapidly scaled from there. I think we'll do just shy of a million this year.
Is that going to be a good Christmas present for me?
Happy days, mummy.
So it's been a pretty intense.
Congratulations, intense, that's incredible.
So tell us about your book. Tell us about the book.
So the book came around from a series of circumstances. So I knew I wanted to write something. You know, I'm a big follower of Daniel Priestley and this kind of key person of influence method. So I knew I needed a way to bring customers to me because I'd done years and years of cold calling and selling. I couldn't think of anything worse than doing that anymore. I like the sales conversations. I don't necessarily like the kind of door knocking, let's say. So I worked out if I could become this person of influence within the industry, I'd have a steady stream of people just arriving at my door and we could sell to them that way. So again, attended another conference, was having a conversation with a founder and she said, I've got to introduce you to, and I'll give her a shout out on here, Georgia Kirk. She runs Write Business Results. They help people launch business books that are always bestsellers. I was like, great, let's write a book. As I was leaving that meeting, someone who run the tech space within that building said, oh, Lee, I've got to give you this book because you should write this book. This book is basically should have been written by you. It's great. Grabbed it off her, got on the call with Georgia, held up this book and said, I just want to write basically this book. She said, well, that's good because we launched that book. That's what we did. And that series of interesting series of coincidences. So that book was called The Startup Factory. By a big company based up in Manchester, I start forming a bit of a partnership with the leaders of that business. And Mum, you and Dad went on holiday to Montenegro, of all places, being very adventurous. and Mum was sat on the beach reading my book, as you do. Nice good beach reading there.
I think we should say what it's called.
The Minimal Viable Launch, a guide to creating software that sells itself. Mum sat on a beach, I think one other couple on the whole beach. Yeah, oh, yeah. And the guy turns to Mum and says, do you know the author?
And Mum's like, no way.
Yeah, a little bit. I know him a little bit. And he goes, oh, I know him. Yeah. We're forming a business partnership. And I get a photo of Mum.
You were on a beach.
I was laying on a beach bed in Montenegro. Can I just say at this point, it was a very posh beach. And I was quite a long way from the guy next to me.
Yeah.
And what I did was I did something really naughty. I was reading Lee's book and I put it down, but I opened it so you could still see
the title
because I didn't have a bookmark. And he said to me, do you know the author? And I thought, I've got to be careful here because if he starts saying anything bad, he's going to get it.
Mama Bear's going to come out.
He's going to get it, yeah. And he was, I can't remember. What country is he from, Lee?
I actually don't know what country he's
okay.
from.
Okay. Croatia. He's from Croatia. Anyway, so I said, he went on to say, are you interested in business? And he said, yes, I am actually. He said, like, do you know the author? I said, yes, yeah, I do. And then he went on to tell me all about my son. Okay, so I'm sitting there and I was like, I'm going to stop you now just in case you dig a hole for yourself.
Yeah.
He's actually my son. Yeah.
What are the chances?
And I've still got, I've just bought this in. This is the bar bill. For Alexis,
of course.
And from the Startup Factory. So I got him to write his name down. I took a photo of this and sent it to Lee.
I was so confused. And then went to the bar. Both on my phone in WhatsApp. I was like, how does that happen?
Okay. And we ended up watching the World Cup together because the World Cup was on there. And what are the chances of that?
Oh, the universe does strange things sometimes,
doesn't it?
It's
wild, isn't it?
Yeah, really, I love these kind of stories.
That is the fascinating thing about writing a book, which I'm, you know, this came out 2 years ago now. And it has rippled through time. Like, I still get people sending me photos of the book, giving me messages saying, I've just read this. This has been incredible. I get shout outs from podcasts. I got tagged in a post the other day where someone had been on a podcast and they recommended 3 books. One was Daniel Priestley's Keepers of Influence. One was my book. And I was like, screenshotting that, like that is a big, you know, part of that journey.
How does that make you feel?
It's wild to see, because writing a book is not easy. I think it's something silly, like 90% of all books that start getting written get abandoned, like before they get the first draft. And then from first draft to so it's 3 drafts of that, it's a stupidly high attrition rate, again, of never being published. And it always makes me laugh, because as soon as you tell people you're an author, they kind of start to treat you differently, even if they've never read the book. And I always think, it could be a colouring book that I put on Amazon. Like, you don't know if it's any good, but they go, oh, you're an awful great,
come on my
show. There's
real kudos, isn't there, saying, that you've written a book, whatever kind of book it is.
Any entrepreneur, I could not recommend that enough. That has opened so many doors. When we get leads coming in, we send them a book with a handwritten note. Just get so much business from that, and it was 10 months of solid effort. It's not easy.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you what the process was like. Did you have an idea in your head of, you know, how you were gonna put it all together? Did you have help? How does it all come together?
I got I'm a big fan of coaching. Anything you do, go one to one. Get someone who is ahead of you who has done it. They will shorten your after success. So we got the one-to-one coaching from Right Business Results, and that was a process of, essentially, I would wake up every morning, I'd read for 30 minutes, then I would copy a chapter of a business book that I liked to just get into the mindset of, like, here's how you write, like the sentence structure, etc., like what does that feel like, and then half an hour of writing. It's not a process of, like, I'm going to go away to a deserted island and write a best-selling book, or I'm going to sit in Starbucks. Like, Starbucks is a really bad place to write. It's loud and annoying. Like,
not J.K. Rowling.
Not J.K. Rowling, yeah. No. You know, it was just a everyday pig-headedness, and it was the first thing I did in the morning because it had to be the priority. So no opening of the emails, no looking at WhatsApp, because there's probably a customer in there who needs help.
Yeah, so real discipline, focus, determination.
It's not that hard.
Like running
to do
a business.
It's just day in, day out, do the yards, do the tasks that you need to do, and you will have wild results if you do that. But anyone who's on the edge about writing a book, I could not recommend it enough.
I think absolutely, and I could say this because, not just because I'm your mum, because as a mum, I'm hard on them all, and I will say what I think. I've read the book, and it is about tech, but what I got from it was, actually, it's got some really good common sense business advice. You don't have to be starting to create an app or do anything like that. I was like, wow, this was really good, and really.
The thesis of that book is, and I think this is what everyone gets wrong, and now with the conversation around AI, I think everyone is making this mistake even more. The tech doesn't matter. The technology is the last thing you should think about when you are trying to automate your business, or when you are trying to build a product that maybe makes you millions, you know, in a life-changing exit. You have to find a burning hair problem to solve. This is a problem that is akin to having your hair on fire. It's urgent. It's pressing. It cannot be ignored. If you find that problem and you really fall in love with that problem and become a world-class expert of every asset of that, nuance of that problem, the technology kind of assembles itself around that. And everything is possible in the world of technology. But, you know, when you get close to the problem, you will save yourself money on the build. It will be leaner. It will be a smaller, more focused product. And I'm fascinated. You know, we go into some of the UK's biggest businesses. We've worked with Octopus Energy. We're working with Dent and Daniel Priestley and his business now. And I'm fascinated by how many businesses, when we dig into it, they have a fuzzy view of their customers' true problems. And I'm going, let me make you a couple of million right now. Let's go and speak to 10 of your customers one-to-one and just ask them very deep questions about their problems, and innovation will come out on the back of that. It's not some weird moment that happens in the shower, you know, an idea sent down from on high. It's go listen to what people are screaming for you to solve.
Yeah.
I think that's so key. Actually, you'll like this one, the Daniel Priestley thing that's running through here. Going back into the day when Daniel Priestley first launched Key Person of Influence, I was involved in booking him for a networking event, networking event. And that's where I first come across his book. He just launched it. And the kids were most probably teenagers at that point. And I gave a copy of the book to our eldest daughter, Jo. And she read it and she was like, wow. And look, if as a business owner, if you have not read this book, you really, really need to. The Key Person of Influence. How do you become the key person of influence in your sector, your niche? And it's still one of the greatest business books. And in fact, Daniel Priestley, I think, owes me a bit of commission, because not only did Joe go on and you go on to go out there and, I mean, an amazing business trip, skiing, etc. with, and I mean, he's must be a multi-millionaire now. I mean, he created Score App, which so many people,
90,000 users on that, yeah.
You know, I mean, absolutely amazing. But this is the thing, if you as a business owner start to share your knowledge, start to share what books you're reading, who you are, you know, we should all have coaches, most probably different coaches throughout your life, that, you know, not just in the sporting terms, but in the business terms, because as Lee said, if you go to somebody that's further ahead of you, that you can take that knowledge from, you are going to accelerate your business journey and your business success. And I think that's, you know, incredible. So, and just going back to, let's just touch on Joe a little bit, because you're working, we were talking about networking here, and networking is within your networking organizations, you're networking within your family and friends, you're networking all of the way. Okay. So I know that briefly, Joe, we spoke and I said to you, what sort of networking do you do? I mean, obviously it was a fluke that I met you that day, because you don't really do networking as such at the moment, but you've got a network of contacts.
Yeah. So I prefer one-to-one. So in many ways I do network, you know, meet up for a coffee with our laptops, whatever. I don't go to the networking event, shall we say.
Why were you there that day? What led you to be chatting to Jill?
I was playing golf one day and I bumped into Steve, and he sort of said, look, come along.
He's very persuasive.
Yeah, very persuasive. Went along, and do you know what? I'm delighted I did as well. It was a great night.
Everything happens for a reason.
Yeah. Potentially I'll go to more in the future, but right now, I feel good doing what I'm doing and keep doing it.
Yeah, doing that. Do you network, Lee, at the moment?
I've kind of landed on a form of networking that kind of fits in with my life. You know, I live and travel around the world, which is amazing. And there is a new form of networking, which I think is really worth paying attention to, where business owners get together and go on these kind of transformational trips together. Skiing, go climb a mountain, you know, go, one of our clients has just been to Botswana with 10 other female entrepreneurs to live in, you know, on safari for like 2 weeks together and do a ton of kind of deep work together. And I found that to be really powerful. Find the rooms that make you scared about how much they cost to get into them. because when you are in there, there will be people who will open doors for you that will change your life. That ski trip you mentioned that myself and my sister went on, I texted her before that. The business was going through a real tough spot. And I was like, I don't know, maybe, you know, it's 2.5 years in. Like maybe this is it. Maybe we don't make it. And I said to her, I don't think I can afford to go on this trip. I think I need to, it's like $6,000. I was like, I can't. And then they're spending money and I don't own any ski gear, so I'm going to have to buy all that. And she just texted me back very simply, you can't afford not to go.
I was literally just going to say that.
I could see you saying this.
Yeah. So interesting, isn't it?
I whacked it on a credit card. And that trip has probably earned us close to £300,000.
Wow.
It's formed a partnership with Daniel Priestley. I get to present to their 1,000 members every quarter at this point in time, which is generated off the back of that. We've got a partnership with Will Polston, who's this kind of high-performance coach in Essex. He has opened doors to me, to people I would never dream of being able to speak to.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't go trying to get the angle for business. Like this is, I hate it when you're in a networking room and you can see the person making a beeline for you.
Yeah, selling to you.
And you know
yeah,
they're going
to
sell and you're like, oh, God.
Don't
but
know.
It is.
It's all about building relationships.
Yeah.
And then the business naturally will come as a byproduct of that.
Yeah. I mean, Sarah, let's go to you because I know that you've been sitting here eagerly listening to all
honestly,
of this.
Oh, honestly, there's so many things I want to say. Yeah.
And you know, let's go back to your networking, what you've created, because you've created something very, very special for lots of entrepreneurs to come and take that forward. But it's not, I'm just going to say, it's not just a networking group because I've mentioned earlier that you run a yearly event, which might even become bi-yearly once you take off, and the Sisterhood Life. So tell us a little bit about the conception and what you want for your members.
Yeah. So I'm going to put my hands up first of all and confess that when I first created the networking group, I didn't have any sort of preconceived ideas. There was no intention for it to have the structure and the feel that it does now. I've hosted for other networking groups before going back. Then COVID came along, the doors shut, we couldn't get together in person, it all changed. And then when we came out the other side of that, everything looked a bit different, and I stepped away from the group that I was involved in. But I'd started a new business during COVID. I'd qualified as a menopause wellness practitioner, and I wanted to get out and tell everybody what my new business was. And I said to my husband, I really want to start networking again. I'm going to have a little look and see who's around. Maybe I could start a group in Southend. And he said, and I credit him all the time. I don't credit him for much, but I'm crediting him for this. He went, just start your own group. And I went, oh, no, I can't start my own one. Don't be ridiculous. No one will come if it's just my thing. And he went, just go to the pub with a few ladies and just see what happens. I went, well, I can do that. So I messaged around some of the ladies that used to network with me before. And I said, I'm just going to go to the pub. Let's have a chat about business. Would you come? And they all went, oh, yeah, we'll come. And unbeknown to me, they were telling people about it. Mm-hmm. So the six people that I was expecting ended up being 12.
Okay.
So I had a whole table of like-minded ladies who just wanted to have a chat about business. And I was like, oh, okay. So maybe people do want to come. And then they all went, well, what's he called? I went, I don't know. I just got you to the pub. So I said, look, if you come back next month, I'll have a name for you. And they were all chucking names at me. And I was like, oh, no, nothing landed on that day. So I got home, took my lovely doggy for a walk, always do my best thinking when I walk the dog, bit of quiet time, no podcast, no music, just me and my own thoughts. And the Sisterhood popped into my head and I thought, oh God, that's a great name. And then I thought, oh, someone's going to have got it because it's such a great name. So did what every good business owner does when they get home and they've had a harebrained idea about something. You Google, is there a Sisterhood networking group anywhere? Check company's house because you don't want to start a business and then find out someone's in company's
so
house
many
already.
People don't do that.
Yeah. Check trademarks as well because, you know, if you're serious about your business, you want to make sure that no one is already trading under that name. No Sisterhood networking group anywhere. To this day, I still can't believe it, although I kind of think that maybe it was waiting for me. So so the Sisterhood Networking Group was born, and I think, and that was kind of a defining moment. I think the minute the name landed, it then created a different feel. We definitely appeal to the holistic business owner, those ladies that don't feel comfortable in that corporate networking environment where you've got now your 60-second elevator pitch and everyone's suited and booted at 6:30 a.m. looking like they'd rather be in bed than anywhere else. No offense, if you love that kind of networking, by all means. But the ladies that were coming to my meetings, they wanted something different. They wanted a supportive space. They wanted to be able to, like I said earlier, you know, share what was going on with them, the good, the bad, But then also be one another's biggest cheerleaders, because that's the thing, is that we said about building relationships.
Mm, yeah, absolutely.
That's what we do around the table. Then we go away and go, oh my God, I've got the perfect lady for you, Sally. I've just met her. She does X, Y, Z, and I know that's what you're looking for. I'm going to put you in touch. That's how it all came about.
So you started to grow and you started to have these groups, and you started to be based over in Essex. When did you get the feeling that you then needed to grow the business and decide on a franchise model for your business? Because that's a whole nother level. And you've still not been going that long.
Yeah. So yes, that first meeting was October 2022. Like I said, the minute the name landed and that meeting was successful and busy, almost immediately I was thinking, oh, this could be a franchise. So that one meeting, that was October. I launched another meeting locally and hosted it myself in January. And then I think by the summer, I was hosting 5 meetings in my local area, sort of in fairly close proximity to each other. And then you were saying about coaches, I signed up for a mastermind. I did a 6-month mastermind. And one of the ladies that was running that had launched a franchise business. So I got access to franchise course that she'd created. So by the end of 2023, I was like, I know what I'm doing. I literally inhaled that franchise course in like 10 days, like consumed everything, made copious notes. Like, right, what do I need to know to make this work?
So can I just go back, because, you know, because Lee was talking about making that decision to go and learn. So you found this mastermind course. Did you have any doubts about the, because some of these are very costly.
Yeah.
It's not only the time, it's the money too. Yeah. And at a certain stage of the business, did you have any, was it like a, oh yeah, I'm just going to do it? Or did you have to really think about it? Did you ever have any doubts, or did you know you needed to do it?
I didn't have any doubts. Again, I'll go back to what you said, Lee, about investing in yourself. Investing in the mastermind, it was a lot of money.
Yeah.
I had to convince my husband that it was a wise investment, because he's corporate.
Yeah.
We've had personality tests. We are literally the opposite ends of the spectrum. I'm a yellow, oh my God, it's going to be amazing kind of person. And he's a, well, you should just think about that. Why don't you consider X, Y, Z?
He's a green. Yeah.
But we actually, we match together really well, because he brings me back down to earth and makes me focus on the important things that I'd rather forget about.
And I'm the details.
Yeah, he's the details guy. And I'm the ideas person. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's going to be great. I carefully considered the investment, but anything in life is a risk, right? Mm. Everything that you do is a risk.
I find it fascinating how many people don't, entrepreneurs, they won't make that bet on themselves. I got a one-to-one session with a guy, £7,000 for 1 hour. And it was a charity auction. It was a charity auction. There may have been some wine involved. Someone said to me after, they said, you won't make your money back for that? I was like, all I have to do is make £7,001. All right, there's an opportunity cost, but I'm going to have that knowledge for hopefully the next 60 years. Yeah. And this person runs £100 million worth of businesses. I think I can probably learn something from them in an hour. And that meeting has again, like, added multiples on top of that. But so many people struggle to make that bet on themselves.
Yeah.
What do you think about this, Joe? Your early stages of your business life, and you know, that you're going to come to a stage where perhaps you don't know what to do next, or were you talking about perhaps purchasing maybe land, building, things like that. How do you feel?
I'm all for investing in yourself. I feel you've got to invest in yourself to better yourself.
Yeah.
Whether that's, you know, from my point of view, your badges and things like that in the football coaching industry. But people, you know, older, more experienced, so much knowledge to give. But not many people do it for nothing. So you've got to pay for it to improve yourself.
Yeah, you've got to find those right people. And there's some, you know, there are people that call themselves coaches. Coaches are different from mentors, etc. And I think it is about finding those people. Do you think, I can definitely see another income stream for you. Joe, in many ways, with the knowledge and the speed that you're going for future income streams. But do you know, are there people in your industry at the moment that you could look at and go, they are doing that? Because you've created something quite unique in what you set out. You firmly said, I want professionals or semi-professionals, or they've had that experience. That's what I want.
There's people out there who do, football coaching. Of course there is. Is there people who do what we do with our intensity, with our maybe looking at every minor detail? I'm not sure. I'm not sure there is. And if there is, fair play to them. But for me, I'm worried about our company and only us.
Yeah.
Because we're the only ones who are going to stop the growth.
Yeah. And that's fulfill football coaching. Because we haven't mentioned that name yet. And I know you've got a waiting list, haven't you?
Yeah. I think it's about 65 children now on the waiting list. And that's the only reason they're on the waiting list, because of facilities. Once we get another facility, we currently have 3. Once we get another one, and it's the right one, we'll start getting them in and build another waiting list, hopefully.
Okay, so let's use our power of network here today. And for people who are listening in, let's have a think about speeding this up for you, because you are looking for... Tell us what you're looking for and the areas currently that you're looking for, and see whether we can, over this Christmas period, come up with some ideas for you.
So, looking for 3G pitches, 11 sides, ideally with a bar or some sort for the parents whilst their children are getting trained. But we're also looking to going into more schools. So we're in 2 schools in Sheerness currently. But we're looking to potentially go into more schools and putting on after school clubs for them.
Okay. And what sort of facilities would you expect a school to have?
3G, hopefully a 3G pitch, but if not,
what,
just a
sorry,
cross pitch.
Being a complete football dunce, yeah. What's a 3G pitch?
It's an artificial football pitch with floodlights. Basically, it's fake grass, but like AstroTurf.
Got you. Just in case there's anybody listening that's going, I don't know what that is.
A better version of AstroTurf.
Nice.
But in the schools, just a grass pitch, we could work with that, or even in a hall for the after school clubs. But for fulfill group sessions and one-to-ones, it will have to be on a 3G pitch with floodlights.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I've looked at your website, Joe, and it's great, because it really explains what you do from the one-to-one, the 1-to-2 and the 1-to-3. So, or the 3-to-1. Yeah. Is it the 3-to-1? The 3-to-1. So one coach, 3 kids, 3 yeah. players in those different age groups. And so let's talk about the parents for a little bit. So the parents come along. I was watching a comedy show on the television the other day about training children's football, and they had a respect line in the indoor arena where the parents wasn't allowed to go over the respect line. So tell us about herding parents.
Is it like herding sheep?
It's to be fair, all ours are good as gold. Of course, every parent wants the best for their child.
Of course.
And, some players to some parents... Parents probably might think they should be playing higher or whatever than they are currently. So I think there's a lot of honest conversations which I've had.
Mm.
But, every child's, every parent's perfect child in their eyes, right?
Of course. And want them to be the next big thing, presumably.
Want them to be the next Messi.
Yeah. Sort out the pension and, so retire to the Cayman Islands.
Lots of honest conversations, but never saying your child's not good, because every child, is just waiting to unlock their potential.
Oh, God, I love that. I just love that. That's so fantastic. Yeah. So you've got, I mean, I know you've got great people skills. You've got to have great people skills when you as a 20-year-old are talking to parents about their child. That's a very different sort of conversation for the parents to have as well, because they're not expecting that. They're not expecting that, but they've obviously got, a deep respect for for what you do and what you've set up and the opportunities that you're giving.
How do you find parents communicating with you being such a youngster yourself? Because, communicating with older.
I think everyone's been pretty good. When we started, it might have been a little bit different, but since it's sort of grown, I think the work sort of does the talking. What we offer, the social media, they can see we're in it. We don't use Fulfill as a cash cow. It's not a cash cow to us. It is strictly, we are in it for the children, which I think maybe not everyone is. Mm. And I think parents see that, we try and, for instance, a few weeks back, I tried to put a child into Bromley. And I'm super honest, when they come to us, I'm saying I'm not going to put your child in Man City because I'm not. But what I can do is I can try and improve them. I can help their confidence. And my team can definitely work with them, over a few weeks, few months or a year, it has been now, and help them become the best versions of themselves.
Mm. So transparency and honesty
is what it is for us, I think, and the parents sort of buy into that and see it.
So you said you're in three places at the moment. Tell us where they are.
Jindam, Maidstone, Sheerness.
And so there's good room for improvement there, isn't there? And I know Sarah's from Essex, and I know there's lots of facilities over there. So that's a good way to creep into that. But also, lots of other
potential.
I think the other thing is potentially partnering with a higher league club. So we work quite close to a grassroots team called Medway Town, which have 46 teams, I believe.
46, that's amazing.
So loads of children sort of, benefit from their facilities, coaches. And we go in building JPL teams with them and whatever else. But looking to also build partnership or connection with teams maybe from the National League and above, whether that's we come in and coach their teams or building teams for them. So there's, there's lots of opportunities.
So with that particular layer, Who is a good person for you to speak to? Because within that football club, who do you need to have those starting conversations with?
So I like to talk to the chairman. I like sort of jump
just,
in.
Just go straight
to the top. No messing around.
Just, go in there over a car. I love a coffee. Go over there. Have a coffee.
You drink
them.
A lot of coffee, no, Joe.
Have a coffee with them and, just be honest with each other. What can we do for you? What can you do for us? And how can we improve each other?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's my sort of thought process when talking to people and meeting new people.
Yeah, that's great. Do you love a coffee, Sarah?
I don't mind a coffee. I'm a latte girl. You're asking. Yeah.
So when you for example, let's go back to your networking groups and what's the format? Tell us about the format. Is there coffee involved?
Oh God, yes, always coffee. Always coffee.
I'm there.
Yeah. If it's nighttime, because we do offer nighttime networking groups in some of the franchise areas as well. Quite often there's wine too. Whichever you prefer. There is a loose structure, so we always have a guest speaker. As much as I want to offer support for all the ladies, bringing everybody together to create those relationships and connections, I also love to be able to send you off having learned something new as well. So we bring guest speakers in, which kick the meeting off, normally sort of 15 to 20 minutes. It can be anything about practical business advice tools that you might need, through to how to have a great facial. Literally anything and everything that that my ladies can offer. Try and keep it in-house if we can. So ladies that come to the meetings, they get first dibs on the guest speaker spots. And then we literally just all go around, introduce ourselves, say what we do. And I always say to my ladies, what do you need help with? How can we help you?
Yeah. So they've got that educational opportunity there. Now, we must talk about the Sisterhood Life event, which was held up in London and a great venue.
It's an amazing venue, isn't it?
Absolutely loved it. Yeah. You brought that all together, but it wasn't only a networking opportunity. Yeah. It was, you had breakout rooms where you could go and choose who you listened to, what the subject was. Yeah. And while everybody was doing that, you were still in main stage doing podcasts.
Re-interviewing some of my previous podcast guests.
Yeah.
So I have been to many a business event, and I'd got what I would call event fatigue.
Yeah.
I felt so much like it was rinse and repeat every time I used to go. Same faces, same talks, sit down. There's a notebook on your chair. You write notes, then you go home and then you never look at the notebook ever again. And you spent hundreds and hundreds of pounds to sit there and literally just do the same thing over and over. And I just wanted to rip it all up and just offer something different. The podcast launched in March last year. I have got a background in radio, so it felt like a sort of a natural bolt on to what I was creating, meeting these incredible women, hearing their stories, sat around the table and thought, well, I don't want to just hear them. I don't want these ladies here to just hear them. I want the whole world to hear them. So that launched, in March last year. And just like with the meetings and the groups, really, I knew that it had huge potential. And the minute, the podcast launched, I thought, how great would it be to do this live in person for an audience? And then kind of all the pieces started to fall into place. And I thought, how nice would it be for people to be able to listen to these episodes, like a little mini version of them live, but also at the same time, be able to experience the expertise of all these different women that I'm crossing paths with. The groups, the rooms were themed into business and wellness and personal development. I called on some amazing ladies that could deliver 30-minute sessions. So like a real intense, come into the room and then go away with your brain buzzing, thinking, right, I can implement that. I could go away and maybe find somebody that offers that kind of treatment. So many different things. And like you said, it was the second year I'd done it.
It was my first year of going and... we'd never actually met in person.
No, we hadn't. I got to hug you in person for the first time.
I'd met you. Yeah. But you started the event with something very, very different, which I explain how you started the event with the lovely...
With Chloe.
Yeah.
So Movement is Medicine. I came across that because I had a lady come to my meeting. So not any of my franchisees. She actually came to me. It's a franchise model, so you can go and seek out Movement is Medicine where you are. And it's all about, I just wanted to kick off the day and really energize everybody and get everybody raring to go. And it's all about connecting with yourself and identifying areas of stress in the body and how powerful music is to be a stress reliever. And I think we underestimate
Absolutely.
Music on in the house in the morning and it helps kickstart your day.
That, I can't remember what it's called, the sound treatment that you use for wellness is, I was speaking with a guy the other day and he's saying it's the fastest growing sector in the well-being space in the world of people now realizing that, I think sound baths, something like this.
Yeah. Oh, I'm a regular. Do you like a sound bath? Yeah.
But the connection as she started, I've never come across it before, but literally like putting your hand on your heart and then listening to the beat of the music and then starting to move. I had a really weird experience. I'm not an overly emotional person and I'm like, Lee's most probably disagreeing with me here, but I think I'm like, I'm like, especially when it's business related, I'm pretty like...
Head on, crack on.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, what is this water on my face?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I was like, I have got no idea what is going on, but I need to look at this because this was really amazing. But everybody it was a great way to start the event. It was great fun. And then I loved the breakout rooms. And I've got to ask you, how did you connect? And could you tell us about your star guest who came along? I know all your ladies are stars, but there was a particular one.
My headline guest, Lizzie Jackson. Yes. So I met Lizzie when I attended an event in the summer that was hosted by one of the lovely ladies that comes to my meetings, High Vibe Fest. Which it very much a bit of me, again, all about connection, She had some great guest speakers. So we were talking about those rinse and repeat events, something completely different, very much about, you know, self-reflection, what you need, what you want. And Lizzie was a guest speaker for her. And at that point, and I was toying with the idea of trying to get, you know, trying to nail a celebrity guest, you know, get someone on the podcast that was really well known. But in the back of my mind, I was like, I'll know when I meet the person that's meant to be my headline guest. And Lizzie came on and was talking all about all the different badges that we give ourselves, the different names that we apply to ourselves, all these, you know, preconceptions and, you know, different struggles that we faced as humans. And as she was talking through this, I was like, oh my God, that I think Lizzie needs to be my headline
guest. Yeah,
it just felt right. And at that point, I hadn't interviewed her for the podcast. So after she finished, I nabbed her and I went, please be a podcast guest for me. And then if you would be so kind, I'm doing this event in November. So this was the summer. And I need a headline guest. Would you consider being? And she went, and she's a TEDx speaker. She's written books. Amazing lady. Incredible. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think the stories that resonated were very, very powerful.
Mm.
And a really great event. So if you're listening you've got to go along to the sisterhood event. So we're going to take a short break now. We're going to have some music and we're going to come back after because Sarah's got an exclusive.
A world exclusive.
She's got a world exclusive coming up. We're going to talk to you about events. We're going to give some shout outs and lots and lots more.
Hello? Can anybody hear me?
Advertising your business can sometimes feel like you're trapped down a well, waiting for someone to respond. Choosing to market your business with fuzzy logic, you won't just be heard, you'll be seen. We offer websites, social media and content creation packages that are fully bespoke to you and your business. And the best thing about it, we're affordable. So stop hiding and boost your digital presence using the power of fuzzy logic. Visit www.fuzzy.studio for more information.
Boom, 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 boom.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight.
Welcome back, everybody. Hope that got you in the Christmas mood. Not many days now till Christmas. And as we've just heard from my son, he's just having a mega year. So I'm sure I'm going to get the most gorgeous present.
Taking me out for lunch today, by the way.
Yeah, well, that might change. That might change. Lee, we've been talking about events. How do you get people in the room? What is your methods and what pain points do you solve for your potential clients?
Yeah, so we've just run an event about the way AI is changing marketing, and you know, we really aim to put on events and experiences for people that are highly educational. And I really believe that. I hate going to an event where someone is just pitching at you. I want to pack £10,000 worth of value into, you know, an hour, 90 minutes, something like that. And in that particular event, we were, you know, showing not just how AI is changing marketing, but how you can actually take practical steps to apply that in your own business so that you can make a change. And I love this saying, right? You can't just read about doing push-ups and get fit. You got to do the push-ups, yeah. Right? So
we're trying to get them
to do the
So
the
annoying.
Push-ups. It is annoying. But, you know, we have a challenge because I am in different countries every single month. Throwing physical events basically only ties in when I'm back in the UK, you know, maybe once, twice, maybe three times a year if we got...
He does love his family, can I just say?
you're just all very intense. Yeah. It's short, intense verse, which is really good.
A whole family of entrepreneurs is hardly a surprise, is it really?
It is intense, yeah. It is intense. So we do a lot of online events, webinars, you know, at the kind of bottom of our funnel. We bring people in through the YouTube channel. We bring people in through podcasts that I'm guesting on. And then we'll run different themed events based on the needs that we've discovered on our in our customer database, and see if we can pull people into our world that way.
So what types of burning hair problems are you solving? What are these business? Because AI is just all over the place at the moment, and it's so controversial, and so many people don't know what they're talking about. So give us an overview of that and what your view is.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I've worked with AI, quote unquote, you know, for the last 7-8 years. We used to just call it machine learning, right? And everyone thinks about the large language models as being the only AI game in town. And in fact, actually, there is a whole world of AI that goes far, far, far beyond the capabilities of ChatGPT. We have a very specific philosophy. I am not a doomer and I don't believe in this gloom that surrounds the conversation of AI, that it's going to disrupt everything, it's going to destroy all jobs, and we need basically the government to give everyone a universal basic income because the robots are going to run everything. I think it's a very, very naive viewpoint. I think people like Sam Altman, Dario Modi, who runs Anthropic, they say these things because it's what draws in investment, it's what draws attention, what gets more clicks online. AI is going to improve things pretty gradually over the next 20 years, or AI is going to take all jobs in the next 12 months. And the goalposts keep moving from there. So we help businesses do applied AI. We're the AI realists. We say it is going to change everything. Your customers' expectations are going to rise exponentially about the amount of personalization in your marketing, in your sales, and your product delivery. And the true power and promise of AI, the way that I see it, is not about having an AI bot interact with your customers for you. It's about getting AI to enable you to treat your customers as individuals again, becoming a high-tech, high-touch company that is able to get an AI to focus on the low-value, low-leverage work that is a never-ending pile of work in your business, right? Yeah. So that you can be a face, spend more time with your customers, spend more time actually following up and building relationships, be more consultative. That is the hedge against AI, and actually something that humans are pretty uniquely good at. In terms of that, we talked a lot about coaching today. Coaches come to us all the time. They say, "I want to build a coaching bot." I say, "Great. No one's gonna. You currently charge $30,000 a year. No one's going to pay you $30,000 a year when it's just speaking with an AI bot. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
What we need to do is actually build you an AI product delivery system that means you can handle double the amount of clients and you can be present in the room with them when you're trying to change their lives. That will grow your business. The building the barriers with AI will not grow your business.
So when you're doing your online presentations and your webinars, et cetera, how do you find that is for you in terms of delivery and with being face to face, which one do you prefer, and what do you think people get out of the two different sorts of presentations?
I can offer quite different experiences online. You know, the presentations we do are pretty live and interactive, and you know, we can handle pretty large scales there. I started with the online presentations because no one ever believes this about me when I say this, but I'm actually quite shy. Mom's going to laugh at this. I'm quite shy. I don't like speaking in front of people. I get very nervous. And I was telling my team a story the other day when I was on the way to work in one of my first tech jobs, and the CTO said, can you just give like a 5-minute update in the all hands? Is there 20 people in the work kitchen? I was on the bus on the way to work, and I started feeling really sick.
Oh,
I was like,
no.
Oh my God, I'm going to throw up.
Oh!
I got off the bus. I was sick. Then I called in sick to work and said, I can't do it. I got to,
no
I'm
way.
Going home. Because I crumbled at the thought of speaking with my own colleagues. Last month, I just flew back to London and did a talk in front of 300 people live. And I still got very nervous before that, but the repetition of exposure of that fear has made it much less, right? So the online was a bit of a crutch for me. It was easy to just stand in front of a webcam, have, you know, 5 people on Zoom.
Easy.
And, you know, you don't, once you're sharing your slides, you don't see the people, right? But now moving more and more in person as much as we can. And we want to be running kind of mastermind and academy sessions next year, where we're bringing ambitious business owners into the spaces where we can say, this is how you are going to create new products and experiences with AI, not who cares about using AI to create social content. It's boring. It's a way bigger tool than that. We can do so much more cool stuff.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I remember that story, Lee, because I remember you doing that. And this is progression in business. This is how you become the key person of influence. It starts with very many different things. Mm. And like you, Joe, you were saying, like, I like to go straight to the top. I like to talk to the chairman. But we all have fears about different things. The more you practice, the more you put yourself in that position. I remember myself being chosen to play a role at school, you know, get on the stage at Christmas and do that. And I couldn't go in. I still remember it. I was 8 years old. Aww. And my mum and dad were so disappointed, but I just couldn't do it because of nerves. And yet then over the years, you practice. Yeah. And I've been very fortunate to speak on stage to, I think it was just over 500 Malaysian business owners out in Malaysia, and I was like, oh my God, I really hope they understand English. and you know, that was a really different experience, but I've got the bug. I've got the bug, and I think you get, you know, I like doing it. I think you can deliver so much impact because you're visually there, and also you connect with them. Have you got the bug now?
Yeah, like, I think it's interesting. I talk to a lot of people about this, maybe who aren't running their own business, and they say, I don't know how you do that. I get nervous and I'm scared. And I'm like, you're thinking that I don't. Mm. It's normal. That's your natural fear response. It's trying to keep you
it's
safe.
It's adrenaline. Yeah.
You have to push through that. And you will have the biggest buzz you've ever experienced when you've done something, when you've been scared of something and moved towards the fear and then beyond that fear, you will have a incredible amount of chemicals flowing around your brain that will make you feel as big as a giant kind of thing. And it is a bug where you can, you know, start to push yourself more in these
into
ways.
Into doing that.
I have a couple of tips. So whenever I'm approaching something that I know I'm going to be really nervous about, I look at myself as occupying different roles. So I have the business role that I occupy, the Sarah that's the sister of networking group Sarah, then I have the podcast Sarah, and then, you know, all these different where you have to put yourself out there and you're doing all these different facets of your business. Just look at it as that you're playing a part, rather than it being, oh, I'm Sarah Ridge and I've got to do this today. I'm Sarah Ridge, the Sisterhood Networking Group owner. So, and I can step into that role and feel really comfortable in it rather than feel like it's me sat at the table. Because actually, very similar to you, I'm actually quite shy as well. Yeah. I find social situations actually quite stressful when I have to walk into a room and I don't know anybody. I find that quite challenging. But when I walk into a networking meeting, I'm Sarah, Sisterhood Networking Group Sarah. I can sit down at that table. I feel comfortable. I'm never nervous, you know, standing up, you know, re-interviewing my podcast guests at the event that you mentioned. Not nervous about that at all. Absolutely love that. Thrive on that. it would literally scare the bejeebies out of a lot of people, but I'm occupying that role.
What about you, Joe? Is there any times, I mean, you're wearing many hats from being a footballer, which you still do. Do you suffer with nerves at any point?
I think I used to, sort of going through the ranks when I was younger. But no, I thought, for me, football now is all about enjoying it.
Yeah.
You know, yes, it's semi-pro, and yes, there's fans, and, you know, if you don't play well, you could, you know, it's like a job, right? You could lose your job in football. But no, I don't get nervous when it comes to playing. When it comes to coaching, I don't get nervous either. I think, obviously, we've got Christmas parties coming up and things like that, and I think going up talking, I might be a little bit nervous because there'll be 200-300 people there. So yeah, I might be nervous when it comes to that, and I'm putting presentations together and speeches and whatever else now, but no, not really.
No,
life's too short, right?
Life's too short.
Yeah.
I don't know how you're ever going to get time to be nervous because you're literally non-stop. I know that like everything is coming at you thick and fast at the moment, and you know there is, you like to be busy. There's always something. Was you like that as a youngster? Was you always on the go?
Yeah,
We should interview your mum and dad on this.
I think some things will come out, but yeah, no, 100%. Always on the go.
Well, I'm going to be very gentle today, okay? Because I know Lee was most probably quite nervous about coming on and being interviewed by me, because obviously I know an awful lot about him and about his past. But
I don't know what mum's going to say.
I'm going to be really gentle with you two today and not delve too much into that. But I do think being open and honest with our stories about, and I see a difference in business at the moment where people are not just, there's still some dinosaurs out there that turn up as their ego, their ego business self. They'll never do anything wrong. There's never anything gone wrong. But I think if we, and I see this from young entrepreneurs, they are willing to say, yeah, I did this right. This was difficult. I did that wrong, but I've learned from it and I've come on. And I think, especially when we talk about finances, not all businesses run. They don't run in a straight line upwards. They go up, down, up, down, up, down.
I can 100% vouch for that.
Absolutely.
All businesses go.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe, you were talking earlier about, you know, listening to other people that have been through business and learning from that. And as business owners, and for those business owners out there, please get talking, please get volunteering to go into schools, to go into colleges, be open and honest with that experience and you know, inspire people. Sarah, I wanted to come to you because I know that you've spoken about going on a franchise course and starting that franchise journey. Tell us about the franchises that you've got now and, you know, who are you looking for? Because there's opportunity out there.
There is opportunity. Yeah. So everything about the Sisterhood Networking Group is about accessibility and affordability. So, I mean, you could go and search for a franchise and they range from, you know, your high street franchises that are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pounds. We're nowhere near that. We're super affordable. It's very much a bolt-on business. So all of my franchisees, all of them bar one, are business owners themselves. I have got one lady that's just joined where the Sisterhood Networking Group is her business.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's an opportunity, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I didn't really entertain that idea until it was put in front of me. I was a bit on the back foot about it, thinking, oh, no, it's, you know, networking is for business owners. Mm. So you've got to have a business. But when I got to know Nick, I knew that she wanted to be inspired. And also she was great at bringing people together. She's very heavily involved in her kids' school. She's on the PTA. She's a great organizer. And she was really excited about coming and joining the team. So yeah, our franchise model is suitable for anybody. We have a very heavy direct sales network marketing contingent because networking meetings, traditionally, it's really difficult to get a seat at the table if you're in direct sales or network marketing.
So your model is one per franchise or one pound meeting?
Yeah, we only have one representative from each direct sales or network marketing company at each meeting. And it can be different. So if a franchise owner is operating sort of 3 to 5 meetings in their local area, it can be someone different for each meeting.
So tell us about the scope of where you are, where your franchises are at the moment, and what are the opportunities?
Yeah, so we're pretty much across the whole of Essex. The only place we haven't reached is sort of North Essex, Bishop, Stortford, Harlow, that kind of way, as you're heading sort of towards Stansted Airport. Still looking for franchise owners in that direction. Just creeping into Kent.
Yes, I know. That's how we come about. Yeah, I met the lovely Amy.
Yeah, Amy Avis. Yeah. Amy. Amy was utterly convinced that networking wouldn't work in Dartford because she'd tried to network. She'd joined a couple of different networking groups, and the majority of them had crashed and burned. They hadn't been successful. And she was one of my first franchise appointments. So we were very much about managing both our expectations, really, because neither of us knew how it was going to pan out. Yeah. So we were both realistic, both, you know, she was saying, yeah, don't get too excited, don't know how it's going to play out, but we'll give it a go kind of thing. And I remember each franchise has its own private Facebook group, which is sort of an online community, an extension of our in-person meetings. And we opened the doors, and I think within the space of 2 weeks, she had something like 150 members. So we'd gone from, I'm not sure anyone's going to be interested, to, oh my God, I can't keep up. There are so many. So it just goes to show the style of networking, the kind of, kind, supportive community we're creating.
I think the kind of need, and I think that's what I'm seeing over the networking platforms now, is there is literally so much choice out there.
Yeah.
I think the business owner needs to think, what do I actually enjoy?
Yeah.
What am I ready for now? Because I think you go through different stages in networking
of
as
course.
Well.
Yeah.
You might start off with something because you're feeling very nervous, or you're starting on your business. And a bit like what Lee said, he's now doing something completely different. He's found a different way. And I think it's about finding your tribe.
Yeah. We definitely are a magnet for ladies that have either never networked before or have been burnt really badly in the past, because, as we've previously mentioned, there are other networking groups where, you know, you walk in the door and you feel like you've got crickets and everyone's in little cliquey groups and you're like, which group should I try and approach? And, you know, you kind of wander up looking a little bit awkward going, can I join the conversation? And they look at you like you're mad and you go, why am I here? What am I doing?
I mean, with the network owners that I work with and support their communities, it's all about collaboration.
Yeah.
And the competition has gone. Mm-hmm. And what I mean about that is they are, on this show, for example, the team tell you about lots of different networking events. It's not about we want you all. It's like, get out there, find something that you enjoy, pick the time of day that you can do.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to commit to
things. You don't
have
to be exclusive. And I would encourage you to go and network in as many groups as you can fit into the month that you feel comfortable with. And I will recommend other groups if I think, you know, they're an appropriate fit for whoever is coming to my meetings.
You find somebody and you go, do you know that that could be right for you? Because all businesses are different, and our key times that we need to be in our business are different.
Yeah.
And also the time of year changes.
Yeah.
And we all feel differently about networking at different times of year. I mean, my favourite networking, as well as events, is down my local pub. At the bar, I'm really good at this. I'm an ex-landlady. I'm really good at this. And my husband, who is loves being at the bar, is very shy, and you can almost feel the eyes on the back of my head. Here she goes again. She's talking to a stranger. Yeah, because I just enjoy it. In fact, I'm going to give a shout out to the Hampton Inn at Herne Bay, right on the beach. Lovely, lovely staff. The girls there are saying, Jill, please can we come on the show? Please can we come on the show? And now you'd think, why would I have them on the show? And I tell you why they're coming on the show. It's because I have never seen anything like the teamwork that team have. And I've watched, and I've been a landlady, and I watch what they do. They don't really need supervision. They just know exactly what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I want them to come on and explain, as employed people, what is that culture
yeah.
that they have built where they don't need eyes on them, they don't need telling what to do, it's just automatic. And yeah. I just think that is absolutely fantastic. We're going to come back to your worldwide exclusive, okay? But Jo, can I come to you? You've got, what type of things have you got coming up in the new year? What sort of opportunities for the youngsters? And tell us how people can contact you.
Fine. So before New Year, we've got our Christmas party coming up, which Fulfill Football Coaching is comping for parents, children, coaches. We've got some incredible videos from
wonderful
from managers like Gareth Southgate. Putting a video on for our children and players.
Oh, wow.
I've just gone goosey.
Yeah, that's incredible.
A video from Paul Stewart at Safeguard and Fundamentals, who was former Tottenham and international footballer also.
Oh.
So that's first. In the new year, we've got our Friday Night Elite session starting up, which is going to be really good, and we'll be looking to take them into games versus the academies such as Gynnam, Charlton, Millwall, Bromley, and many more. Our camps continue to grow, get bigger and better every time, but we'll keep finding ways to improve them. We've got an elf coming to our Christmas camp coming up for the children. It's a little bit of fun for them.
It's not you, is it?
It's not me. I'm not the elf. So yeah, lots of fun, lots of camps and lots of new sessions, hopefully breaking into more schools, getting into more schools and things like that.
How do people contact you?
Via email at jt@fulfillfootballcoaching.co.uk or via my phone number at 07525 917 051.
Yeah, and Fulfill, when you do the Fulfill Football Coaching, it's Fulfill F-U-L and then F-I-L-L, because I made a mistake on that. So give us your phone number slowly again.
07525 917 051.
Yeah, and do you know what? I know he'll get back to you because he's just a bundle of energy, and I know that you really like things run properly.
Yeah.
You really do. Can I just ask, how do you find time for a social life?
After football on a Saturday is my night, so poor girlfriend's always watching me on the phone or messaging.
She must be very understanding.
She's understanding.
Does she like football?
No, not really.
But she must be proud of you.
Yeah. No, she, do you know what? She's great. Really understanding.
Mm-hmm. Give her a shout. We can't call you a girlfriend. What's her name?
Olivia.
Olivia.
Shout out. She's a hairdresser.
Well done,
yeah,
Olivia.
She's great.
Honestly, hairdressers are the best people to network with because they know
everybody and everything.
Yeah. They know everything. Yeah. That's great. What about you, Lee? What have you got coming up in the new year?
So we've just, or will be launching a new AI platform called contextengines.ai. So it helps businesses customize all of their sales presentations, PDFs, landing pages, based on the conversations that you're having with your customers. So you speak with your customer as they tell you about their pain points, their wants, their needs. Instead of handing them that same presentation that you've handed out to 1,000 different people, it's a one-for-one presentation about you, your products, and your services. So we're launching that this year for the early beta testers, and scaling that into next year as well.
Oh wow, that sounds amazing. We must touch on another product that you've created in collaboration with Jo and Zoe. Hey Monica, tell us a little bit about the Hey Monica platform and who that serves.
Yeah, so they've just swept up a load of awards for that AI platform beating out, you're drinking out of a Sage water bottle here, but Sage and Zero were beaten soundly by them. So what is Hey Monica? And I think this is a really good story for business owners listening to this. The door is wide open to go and be a disruptor with software and AI if you are brave enough. And it does not need you to remortgage your house or go and raise investment to do it. They noticed a problem. They've got 20, 30,000 bookkeepers in their group. And they were seeing bookkeepers time and time again get fully qualified, paying lots of money to get that qualification and not being employable at all. They couldn't do the job of a bookkeeper. They didn't know how to interact with customers, didn't know how to run pieces of repeatable work, very common work in the software. And so we were talking about this and I said, what if, you know, we could use AI to create fake clients for your customers. We do live fire exercises for bookkeepers. They can get their work experience. We found that a lot of these bookkeepers were going and working in for accountancies for free. They could get that work experience by interacting with an AI on their own time around their other duties. So they've launched this. It has been a wild success. They are continuing to scale that out. But that's what the kind of usage of AI that I get really excited about is not putting barriers between you and your customers. It's here is a completely new learning experience that is now possible with AI. And you can play that out multiple times. I need to make an introduction for you for an incredible female entrepreneur based in Essex. She just sold her massive photography business. She now runs a series of care homes. And we are building a product for her called Niche Care, the Kindness Code, where it trains, it has carers speak with their children around very difficult subjects. The child's trying to get the staff Wi-Fi password, get you to buy them a vape, whatever happens in these care homes. And the AI sits as their co-pilot and helps them have better therapeutic conversations on the fly with these fake, you know, children. So she's going to be launching that. You should definitely interview her. She's incredible.
Oh, that's giving me goosebumps.
This is exactly where we need to get, you know, need to go with all of this. It's a part of this radio show is a networking experience in itself. There is so much more. We were talking about writing books. I've actually got a gift of a book for you as well, Lee, because I doubt whether you ever bought your mother's book.
I definitely did.
You did? Okay.
Look at his eyes. Look at those eyes. Look, see now he's wiggling around.
Red now, slightly red. Yeah.
He's wiggling around. So it was a great opportunity the other year to co-author a book with my other people in my networking organisation. And it's called Success Secrets for Business Growth. And it was a bestseller in three categories. And again, we went through the process of getting a book coach, and shout out for Mindy.
Mindy networking online.
Book midwife.
Yes.
Okay. Now, Mindy, you do not mess with Mindy. Okay.
That about her.
It was not a case of writing a whole book as Lee did, which is on my next list. This was writing a chapter. So again, for any of you business owners out there who are thinking maybe a book is a bit too far for you, you can collaborate with others to get a book out. You can, Joe and Zoe did this within the Six Figure Bookkeeper. They got other bookkeepers to write chapters and give them the headline. You know, if you've got a networking organization, you could collaborate with a book.
It's on the to-do list for 2026. It's not my world exclusive, by the way.
Good,
there's something else.
Because I was really looking at you thinking, oh dear, have I just done that?
No.
So I've got that for you. And
so cool.
I mean, it's really great to have Joe on here. He nearly didn't get on because I said to him, what football club do you support? And he was like,
oh, was it controversial?
Well, and in my eyes, it's Tottenham Hotspur. I'm an Arsenal girl. But however, football always used, when I had my photography business and I was doing wedding photography, it was, and back in the day, the grooms were a little bit quieter than they are now. And it was almost like, okay, do you like sport? Do you like football? Do you like rugby? And we'd start that conversation off. I'm ashamed to say that, you know, if any of my grooms are listening now, they were mostly Tottenham Hotspur supporters. Good. You know. However, my claim to fame is David Beckham's mum cut my hair when I was little. I sat next to her in my nan's funeral car, and David was over in Spain about to play his first match over there for Man United. And you've got a signed photograph from David Beckham, but that's a bit weird. We won't go into that one. Maybe along the line there may be some connections there that we can
explore.
Do. But that's my claim to fame. Come back to us in a minute.
Hello, Kent businesses. Tired of networking events that don't deliver? Synergy Networking Events has got you covered. Whether you're a networking newbie or a seasoned pro. Our events make networking a breeze. Meet other businesses without the pressure. Enjoy pre-planned seating table moves and even a buffet. all for just £20 for non-members and £10 for members. Build relationships that last and get a result on your investment.
Welcome back, everybody. So we're just going to come towards the end of the show now, but I'm just going to ask my guests a little bit about their Christmas wishes, what they want for Christmas. And we're going to go to Sarah's world exclusive first.
Oh, am I allowed to say it now?
Yes, please. Okay.
So currently, the Sisterhood Networking Group, you can get involved with us in five different ways. So you can come to an in-person meeting, you can network online with us, you can become a franchisee, and you can listen to the podcast or be a podcast guest. But I hosted a networking breakfast at an event a few weeks ago. And the format was unexpected, let's put it that way. I thought I was hosting an intimate VIP small breakfast, and I walked into a function room with 12 tables for six people on each table. And I was a bit deer in the headlights thinking, I don't know what I'm going to do here because I've never hosted for that many people before. And also there were men. I don't do men normally when it comes to networking. I'm female only. But you have to think on your feet with these kinds of things. So got onto the phone to my husband because he's great for that kind of stuff. Talked it all through. And as we're talking, I'm thinking, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it like an online networking session where when I'm hosting, I put people into small breakout rooms. And I thought I'm going to do an in-person version of that. So each table was a breakout room.
Okay.
The response was great. The guys came up to me afterwards and went, never networked like that before. That was brilliant. We loved it. And I didn't think too much about it. But as you do, being an entrepreneur, you go home and you go, maybe this has got legs. Maybe there's something in this. Again, husband, great sounding board, talked it all through within the space of half an hour. Got a whole new arm to the business. So I can exclusively announce, folks, that Sisters and Misters is launching in very January.
Nice. Well done.
I love that. I love Sisters and Misters.
Sisters and Misters. It sounds a little bit like a dating show, which I think it might well be as well.
You can be the new Cilla Black.
Well, potentially. I think I might have to get a few hats. You know, we were talking about the corporate stuff you feel and how I think men want to network in a different way as well, but they're just not, that no one's done it. And I think actually that masculine and feminine energy, when you bring it together, actually makes for a really good mix.
Yeah.
And giving men the opportunity to be able to go, hey, I'm struggling with this. This is a bit rubbish. Can anybody help me with this? It's just as important as offering it to the women as well. So
absolutely.
It is going to be purely for solo business owners, male and female. Launching with yours truly in Southend. It's going to be the last Thursday of every month. Secured a venue this week. It's going to be pay as you go. I'm honest, don't hang around. I've got a logo already, obviously.
Of course you have.
And the response so far, put a few little feelers out and everyone's going, this sounds great. And I will be obviously rolling it out UK-wide and looking for hosts in as many towns as we can hit that might want some mixed networking with a bit more of a relaxed feel.
Oh, that's brilliant. Well done. Congratulations.
Thank
you. Absolutely fantastic. You know, I know that everybody's going to rush off afterwards, but I have got a platform I need to speak to you about. I've got a platform I need to speak to you about, definitely, which could really enhance your businesses and
amazing.
Speed your growth.
Yeah.
From a contact that I've got, that actually contact that Lee put me in touch with, and this is how networking
this is how
works.
It works.
And you know, when you're talking about these things, you know, you're going to be driving home in your car, you know, wherever, and you'll start thinking, oh, got that contact. Oh, I've got that contact. So, Joe, what are you wanting for Christmas? What would be your ideal gift?
A new Apple
a lion.
Watch. An Apple Watch and a lion, I think.
Yeah. An Apple Watch and a...
Lion.
I literally just planted that seed, I think, yeah.
A lion?
A lion.
Oh, a lion. I was like, where are we going to get a lion?
Lion. So we'll get a lion.
An interesting gift,
A new Apple Watch, because I use it every day. And yeah, that's probably it for me.
Yeah.
Maybe sleep past nine.
Sleep past nine. What about you, Lee?
I think I'm looking forward to a bit of a slowdown in the work. And if anyone is out there listening, we are desperate looking for a new product delivery lead. This is someone who can work with me very, very closely on building, award-winning AI products that disrupt industries. If you're into tech, if you're into managing people who can build tech and you want to work on incredible products, please reach out. We are desperate for someone who has that skill set.
Right. What sort of skills do they need? What are, for the ordinary person out there thinking, what does that mean?
They need to be highly organized, someone who can be client facing and manage customers' expectations, what they want, what they need, what they can afford. Someone who can speak to developers is not always the easiest of tasks, if I'm honest with you. And someone who is just deeply interested in tech. You don't need to be a developer yourself, but someone who's interested in the world of technology, has opinion about software, what's good, what's bad, and wants to be involved in creating the next wave of innovative products.
And they can work remotely?
They can absolutely work from it. Would be very terrible if I'm on a beach in Turkey working and saying everyone else has to be in an office. So, we are remote first.
Practice what you preach. Yeah.
I was hoping you were going to say socks because that's what you've got for Christmas. Oh, but, you know, that's
the yearly sock delivery. It always comes in handy.
He moaned last Christmas because I didn't get any socks.
It's tradition,
and
right?
He was like, Mum.
I think I shot myself in the foot because I'd said the year before that, stop getting me the stocking. I'm like 34 now. Come on. And then I didn't get a stocking and I'd forgotten I'd said that. And I thought, my parents don't love me anymore.
Oh, you're never too old to get a stocking at
chocolate
Christmas.
Coins, you know, all of that sort of stuff. Mm. You know, Sarah, what about you? What are you looking forward to and what would you like?
I am getting on a plane and going to New York. It's my daughter's 21st. On the 16th of December. So we head off shortly afterwards for 5 days. She's a dancer. So she's currently studying at Italia Conti, doing a BA in dance. Her dream is to do a class on Broadway. So she's booked herself in to do a class. And one of her presents is tickets to go and see Hamilton on Broadway. So my Christmas is already sorted.
That's
all I want, is all of us together having an amazing time.
Absolutely. Yeah,
really exciting.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got one of our daughters, Gemma. Gemma and Lee, I'm going to give them a shout out. They're getting married on Saturday, the 20th of December.
Aww.
And really, really excited about that. I know Lee's really excited about that because he loves the wedding. That's what he comes home for.
Is that the only reason you come back?
The only reason I've come back this year was a wedding and a stag do. And then, this wedding.
And this wedding. So we're all down.
Are we hoping for a white wedding? Are we hoping for a little bit of snow? Or is that...
Gemma wants snow. Gemma is totally...
We're going to manifest some snow,
Christmas,
people.
Christmas... is her thing.
Oh,
is absolutely
it's
her
magical.
Thing. And we waited a long time for this wedding because they was due to get married just before COVID and it was going to be a summer wedding.
Right.
And we're now having a winter wedding and really, really looking forward to that. And she is desperate for some snow. I don't think she understands the logistics of snow and weddings and people.
And being in the UK where we don't get an awful lot of snow.
We're in a remote village in Devon.
You never
where
know.
They live.
You
never know. But let's have a shout out for Gemma and Lee and I wish you every happiness. And and poor Lee, I mean, he's put up with me for many years and he's put up with the most rubbish Christmas presents that I've ever thought. I really think really hard about them, but I always manage to get him something a bit weird. And he looks at me as like, why did you bother? My other son-in-law, Jack, I remember on his 18th, he wasn't my son-in-law when he was 18, but on his 18th birthday, I was like, I know what to get him. I'm getting him a silver guitar plectrum. I'm going to put happy 18th birthday.
Aww.
And he opened it and he was like, oh, and I was like, guitar plectrum? And he was like, oh, that's what it is. I was like, have you not got a guitar? He was like, no. And I've never played it. I have no idea. Absolutely no idea where that has come from.
Before you say anything else, what other than a beautiful wedding and being mother of the bride, what do you want for Christmas?
I'd like a surprise. I don't like where you have to say what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. I prefer for somebody to think, what would she really like?
Does that work well or does that end in
No, because
disappointment.
I've got to say this story because Wayne, if you're listening, that's my hubby. This is not going to be a repeat of last year. So last year I sat in bed, having a cup of coffee, and he was like, I've got your present. And it come up and it was wrapped in tinfoil.
Okay.
And it was like A4 size. It was wrapped in tinfoil. And I'm like, okay. And I've undone it. And I've undone it, it is the back of one of our placemats. Because I know our placemats because we have dinner on them.
Of course.
And I was like, what are you doing? He went, turn it over, turn it over. I turned it over and it was a printed piece of A4 paper saying that we were going to go and see the Stereophonics, which was wonderful. But the whole, if it had been done and wrapped in some Christmas paper, and I was like, why didn't you do Christmas paper? Yeah. And he was like, I didn't know where it was. You got 354, I don't know, 55 days to find Christmas
paper. To figure it out.
So what I'm doing this year is leaving the Christmas paper.
Just leave it lying around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make it nice and easy.
You hide things around the house that you find Christmas presents halfway through the year that you've forgotten about. So.
Well, as you've brought up hiding Christmas presents, we've got to end on this one. Okay. You have shot yourself in your other foot, young man.
Oh, no.
So as teenagers like to do, they like to go out on Christmas Eve, don't they? Mm-hmm. And have a few bevvies. All right. So he's gone out and had a few bevvies. And being a mum, you know, our immediate family is 17. So there's always a lot to cook for. And back in the day, I was cooking. So we'd have to cook the turkeys the night before because there was just not enough time in the day to do all the presents and get dinner ready. Okay. So the turkeys are done. Okay. So they're all nice and put away. All right. I've made the sausage rolls. Okay. Now I did hide the sausage rolls because when he's come in and he's had a few bevvies, he likes to have
eat the sausage rolls.
So I've hidden them. Okay. Yeah. This was where I went wrong. So I've actually put them in a beautiful glass dish with a dome, which was his sister's. Okay. And I've put them up on the top. Anyways, come in, had a few bevvies and we're in bed. And then I didn't hear all this because I was asleep. He couldn't find the sausage roll, so he started climbing up the kitchen cupboards.
No.
Okay. So he found them, smashed the beautiful glass thing, ate the sausage rolls, and then thought, where's the turkey? Got the turkey out, sat it down, put it on the kitchen, on the dining room table. Okay, started to rip it to bits. And the end of this story is that when I come down in the morning, there was my son, face planted in the backside of a turkey.
Oh, you were not!
And that happened many years ago, and she's never let me forget it.
She's never get over
it. That was Christmas Day ruined.
Oh.
No, we did have two turkeys, but we just
everyone had significantly less portions. Just, you snooze, you lose. Only bird gets the worm.
Just don't leave things lying around. I wonder if she hides
don't
everything
hide the
now.
Sausage rolls. Don't I would hide have just the had four sausage rolls and gone to bed.
The moral to this story
is don't hide the sausage rolls.
Oh,
and I'm
so
sure
funny.
There's many parents and friends have got these food stories. And like Christmas, there's an advert running at the moment that's about Christmas traditions, and they're not always like the best ones, you know, like
people, or the most obvious ones.
But Christmas traditions is, I think, I know Joe, you were saying you've been brought up with lots of cousins and stuff like that, and I'm sure there's a few stories there. But you know, I do wish you all a really, really wonderful Christmas, and thank you so much for coming on. I hope you've enjoyed the experience. I've certainly learned an awful lot today.
Yeah,
and
it's been a pleasure. Thanks
it's,
for having us.
You know, there's more stories to come, and I can't wait to hear of all these businesses' ideas.
I should make this a regular, like, Christmas show.
Yeah,
come back every year for an update.
I should have bought some sausage rolls, shouldn't I? I should have bought some sausage rolls.
Yeah.
I should have bought some sausage rolls. But thank you, everybody. It's been really lovely to have you here, and I wish you a very happy Christmas and a wonderful 2026. Just saying, Lee, how actually old are you?
35.
But what age did you think you was this year?
36. It gets difficult to keep track, doesn't it?
I can totally vouch for that.
It does. Yeah. I've been telling people I've been the wrong age.
I'm eternally 21. So
Lee
know.
Will actually be 36 next October. Okay, so if anybody listens, he's been lying to you. Okay. Thank you all, and I look forward to our next show of the Business Network show. And have a wonderful Christmas.
Tired of IT headaches? Slow computers?
You've been listening to the Business Networking Show with Linda Cloke, John Turner and Jill Russell.